You're listening to All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. As we do at this time each Friday, a look back at the week in North Carolina politics. Here for perspective are Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive North Carolina Justice Center. Hello again.
Hello again. Yeah.
It was crossover week here in downtown Raleigh, a decades-old legislative tradition in which a self-mandated deadline requires bills to advance from one chamber to the other or die. Of course, there are plenty of maneuvers around this deadline and legislative death, which we will inevitably see in the weeks to come. More on that in a moment. First, policymakers voted through about 250 pieces of legislation this week. From each of you, Becky, we'll start with you. A highlight and a lowlight from the crossover week, please.
Probably, well, actually, because I'm an overachiever, two quick highlights.
Okay.
One is we saw a couple bills that were changed to, instead of legislation, going to studies. And the one that is most obvious had to do with eye doctors, ophthalmologist and, you know, that kind of thing. I always think it's good. I work at a think tank. We like studies. I always think it's good. If there's a problem with a piece of legislation, let's pull it back. Let's take a closer look at it. So I always like to see that kind of thing. The other thing, as far as compromise, we saw a compromise on the class size reduction and how to do that. I think it's great that they got it done. It's gone over to the governor's office. I think he may have already signed that bill.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important because school is going to start in a few short months, and school systems need that certainty. So those were my two highlights.
Okay. A low light in a moment. Quickly, context on House Bill 13. This comes from a mandate last year, comes from the philosophy of state senators who want to reduce class sizes. So reduced class sizes were going to have to take effect in the coming academic year. But we heard from a lot of school districts about concerns over decreasing class size and not having enough money for PE teachers and art teachers and music teachers. Districts were concerned about hundreds and hundreds or thousands and thousands of layoffs. So an adjustment was made this week. That's just the context of what you were talking about. And how about a low light, something that didn't go this well this week, something you didn't like?
I didn't like the final resolution. I didn't like the way that it was handled, the controversial bill about hog farms in the eastern part of the state in direct conflict with property rights of people who live next door to those hog farms. That was one. It was a House bill that was rushed through the Senate during crossover week, which seemed very odd to me. Another example of the process and things being rushed through with what I would rather have seen was a study, again, kind of circling back with that particular issue.
House Bill 467 is a bill that would protect hog farmers and larger agricultural entities from lawsuits from property owners pertaining to pollution and foul smells. So also a little context there. Rob, some highlights, lowlights from the crossover week that was?
Well, I would say as a general matter, the lowlight from my perspective was that, you know, I've been here 25 years now. This is 25 years this week I've been in North Carolina, working in North Carolina politics. And I would say this was probably near the worst week that I've experienced in terms of shoveling through regressive, radical proposals that were not vetted in committee. I actually agree with Becky of the fact that that hog bill needs to be studied, but there were dozens of other bills like that that were just rammed through. There's some, you know, hope that because they'll have to be considered in many instances by the other body, that perhaps several of them will be winnowed out of the process. But I mean, there was just a long list of things that clearly were not thought through. The anti-immigrant legislation that the Senate passed with these absurd provisions about allowing the Attorney General to cut off funds to cities that are not in compliance with immigration law, whatever the heck that means, allowing anonymous citizens to bring lawsuits against local government for not being in compliance with immigration law, again, whatever that means. It's just a classic example of the legislature, you know, spending minutes on things that deserved hours or weeks of study. And unfortunately, it's being done with a very sharp ideological agenda while they're doing it. There was, however, one bright spot that came out of the General Assembly this week. The Senate passed legislation that's been bipartisan. It's been proposed by the Second Chance Movement, a group of folks who are working to improve state criminal justice laws when it comes to expunging records for people who have criminal convictions. One of the biggest problems we have in our state with getting people employed who are at the bottom of the economic ladder is that if you got a criminal record, it's very, very difficult to find employment. And, you know, there's a vicious cycle there. And other states have gone down this road. And again, it's a bipartisan idea. It actually cuts down on correction costs. It's acknowledging the fact that people can turn their lives around. So to their credit, senators made, in a bipartisan way, some real improvement here that's going to shorten the amount of time it takes for people to get their records expunged and allow that to happen in a more thorough way. So that's my one bright spot for the week.
Rob, you've been here a quarter century. Becky, you have plenty of experience at the General Assembly as well. A lot of hustle.
And thank you for not saying how many years.
A lot of hustle and bustle this week. You've been around for many crossovers, many more than I have. The pace of this thing, this whole legislative machine, accelerates during this week. Many bills are eliminated from consideration, but at the same time, a lot of controversial proposals move through swiftly. I would say, from my perspective, limited vetting and limited transparency. Is this deadline, is crossover, a good thing?
I think it is. I think that everybody works better with deadlines. It's a little bit arbitrary. As we all know, if there is a piece of legislation, if there's something that leadership wants to get through before they adjourn, and we've still got several months. I mean, we're about halfway through this session. They can certainly get that done. But I think that it is good to have a deadline to vet all of it. I mean, there's been, you know, well over 1,000 bills that have been filed. I mean, at some point, you have to vet through these. And that's what we really saw this week. I think it's important to recognize there were some controversies. Things that were considered, but the majority of the bills passed almost many passed unanimously. Many passed with a very wide bipartisan majority. So although the controversial issues are the ones that are sort of making the headlines, after we dig out of this and look at it, most of the legislation passed with strong bipartisan support. And again, this isn't the end of the road for most of these issues. We'll see them cross over to the other body. We're going to revisit them. We also will see a lot of these things that will not come up in the other body. So we've got a long way to go till it's all done.
Two quick notes from my seat. Very few of these bills that did move this week actually became law. And many of them, you all might have better insight to this than I do, many of these are bargaining tools. Many of these
right.
are sacrificial lambs that the House or the Senate has sent over to the other side so that they can use it in negotiations later on. So those are two of the other things.
You know, the other note there, too, is we always see, and this is the way the General Assembly works. We see this whether it's Republicans or Democrats in charge. You also see measures that were introduced by legislators who perhaps needed to introduce an issue for the benefit of their district, perhaps mm-hmm. promises that were made during the campaign with the understanding that it probably will not see the light of day.
That's politics, of course, not policy.
Right.
Rob, is crossover...
You know, I don't have any particular objection to crossover. I think it does make some sense in some way to have some sort of culling process. But it's kind of like redistricting, actually, in North Carolina, where, sure, Democrats gerrymandered back in the day, and that was objectionable. But it's been ramped up dramatically under Republican leadership in recent years. And it's the same thing with crossover. I feel like we've gotten to this point now where we're literally shoveling through not just bills we need to keep the state running or budget matters or, you know, those kinds of things. We're shoveling through radical, wacky ideas even that haven't been vetted at all, like this immigration bill like I was describing earlier, like some of these changes to local government that are being rammed through. These environmental changes, doing away with buffer rules for streams and doing away with the plastic bag rule out on the Outer Banks. It's just a long list of things that deserve lots of study, lots of expertise to be shined on it and on them. And it's just not happening. We're ramming these things. I hope very much that maybe they'll get it in the second body. But in the recent years, that really hasn't been the pattern. These things will be delayed again until the next deadline, and then we'll have another spasm of legislation sometime in, you know, June or July, in which things will be rammed through, and we'll have late night sessions. And again, I agree, you need deadlines, but it feels to me very much as if it's gotten gradually and gradually worse. And I'm not sure if there's an easy solution to it, but I can tell you the problem is significant.
I think a lot of this is in the eye of the beholder. This is nothing new. This has been going on. Jeff, as you mentioned, this is a longstanding tradition in the General Assembly to have this crossover. And, you know, if you agree with the things they're doing, then it doesn't seem so radical. If you disagree with the things they're doing, it does seem very radical. And that we saw this when the Democrats were in charge. So, again, I think it's the perspective that you bring to things. I don't see any change in this. I tell you, if there's a change, though, in this trend that we're seeing, it's that no matter what the General Assembly does, a lot of these things are ending up in court. And we've seen a great increase in lawsuits and litigation being filed after the General Assembly is finished with their business. And I think that's going to continue, and I think that is a change that we've seen more recently.
Does that speak to this being a more radical time, or does that just speak to a different approach to all this?
I think it speaks to having divided government between Republicans and Democrats, to be honest with you. You know, North Carolina has been controlled by one party for decades. There's been a change in that in the last several years where, you know, Democrats controlled for a very long time. Republicans controlled all three bodies of, or, you know, General Assembly and the governor's office. And now we have a Democratic governor. So I think it's this push and pull between, and that's what I think it's about. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing or that it's bad to have these discussions. I'm not sure that one party control for decades is good for the process. But that's a trend that we've seen, something different in these changing demographics that we've seen, not only with the state's population and the way that that is reflected in our state government.
It's also at a time of hyper-partisan politics and when North Carolina is a national player in the presidential races again. Isn't that part of this as well?
It's part of it. It's really, I would argue that it's not so much been the shift from the Democrats to the Republicans. It's been an ideological shift in our state. The pendulum has swung hard right at the legislature. The Democrats were running things. Liberals like me were fighting with them. They were the moderate business Democrats that were, for the most part, running North Carolina. Now we've swung over to the hard right of the spectrum, in which we have ultra-conservative legislators driving the agenda. And that's the reason there weren't so many lawsuits back in the day, is because they weren't pushing the envelope of constitutionality. The folks that are running the show right now are seizing power for themselves. If it means running over the power of local governments to do it, they'll do that. If it means trying to take power away from the governor, they'll do that. It's a hard-driven partisan agenda, that ideological agenda, that's trying to take the state in a fundamentally different direction. And it's a very narrowly divided purple state, as we see in the national elections. And that's why it's running up against such opposition. And it's why people are mobilizing in these resistance groups around the state. It's why I think there's going to be a big shift in 2018. I think people are seeing the direction our state is moving, and they don't care to accompany it in that direction.
Well, I really disagree with Rob. I think that, you know, what we're seeing is clearly a good representation of the people of North Carolina and these issues being debated. And if you like what they're doing, then you know, it's not so radical. If you don't like what they're doing, then, as Rob described, he believes that it's radical. You know, there really is a middle of the road with this that I'm seeing. I mean, yeah, there are hard left members of the General Assembly. There are hard right members of the General Assembly. But there's a real middle ground there. Again, most of the pieces of legislation that we see pass with a very large bipartisan support. And, you know, that's what I think we're going to continue to see. Now, you know, the headlines and the protest and all this are not about those things that there is a lot of bipartisan agreement with. But the fact of the matter is, most North Carolinians, and certainly their representation in Raleigh, agrees on things like a strong economy, getting people back to work, a good education system, and working towards those things.
I'm going to pick on you a little bit, or I'm going to follow up with two questions. First one is, give me a couple of people who you think are hard left in the General Assembly. Three, if you can come up with three, top of mind.
Susan Fisher.
Okay.
I think.
Buncombe County.
Buncombe County, okay. Yes. I think Terry Van Dyne in the western part of the state. And these are very smart, accomplished. I mean, you know,
disparaging way. Yeah. I'm just following up. Three hard left people.
I think Jeff Jackson, probably.
From
Mecklenburg County in the Senate, would be three right off the top of my head that I would
future
mention.
Future candidate for governor.
Yeah,
My own publication.
Well, yeah.
And that shows the perspective of how far we've shifted. In 20, 30 years ago, Jackson, Fisher, Van Dyne, any number of the moderately progressive Democrats we have would have been considered mainstream Democrats. The pendulum has swung so far. I mean, these people are people who support business, they support tax cuts, they support public investments in developing business. They are moderate Democrats by any historical measure. But, you know, 30 years ago, Democrats were proposing things like nationalizing the oil companies and, single-payer health care for everyone. These folks are, you know, just trying to work with the system we got. So I reject the notion that we have any hard left members in the General Assembly these days.
Well, one other follow-up I wanted to ask, and it's escaped me now, so I'll try to ramble it together, is you said, I'm paraphrasing here, Becky, but I think you just said the General Assembly represents the philosophy of the state as a whole. I'm going to challenge you on that. I'm thinking y'all have lived here longer than I have. As this state has grown significantly, right, 6.5-7 million to north of 10 million people now in 15 years or so, a lot of people, as many as we've seen in generations coming in from other parts of the state, this body, with overwhelming Republican majorities, do you think that that truly represents – I mean, let me back up because I'm not wording this well. In the General Assembly, it is an overwhelming Republican majority. When we see statewide races, they're relatively close. As Rob mentioned, this is a purple state when it comes to presidential politics, at least in the last 8 years. You think the General Assembly is a good embodiment, representation of the 10 million or so people in North Carolina?
I do. Let me disagree with you just a little bit on your sort of second point there. You know, during this election, we saw the Republicans pick up three Council of State seats in statewide races. Roy Cooper won, but he won by a very, very narrow margin. Richard Burr won by a very wide margin.
Yep.
So, you know, when you can argue, and I'm sure that Rob is going to in a minute, that the General Assembly districts have been gerrymandered, and that's why Republicans won. And there may be some truth to it, just like for years, Democrats gerrymandered the districts, and they had an advantage, you know, there. So I disagree with you a little bit about, you know, the results of the election. But a couple of points here. And, you know, a personal story. When I started working at the General Assembly in 2001, I was sitting in the chamber and listening to debate. I don't remember what it was on, but it really struck me that the General Assembly is really reflective of the people of North Carolina. And although there are people who are very hard right, people that are very hard left, they're opinions in many cases are things that I don't necessarily agree with, but you know what? There are people in North Carolina that believe that way, and that's what they think, and that's why they send those representatives to North Carolina, to the General Assembly. That's what the body is all about. That's why it's a deliberative body, that you have 170 individuals that represent all different kinds of thought. It doesn't mean that I have to agree with it or that Rob has to agree with it. I mean, that's what the voters have said. And I think it made me feel really proud, and it made me really respect the tradition and the mission of the process and how that works, because I think that all people's views are represented. It doesn't mean that we have to agree with all of them, but those people who think in ways that I don't deserve the exact same representation that I have. I think the system works. I think it's a good one. And I think that it makes me proud to be a North Carolinian, to be involved in this at the level that we are sitting around this table.
Anything to add?
Well, I would say that, you know, the population of North Carolina, yeah, it's north of 10 million. Of that number, what, 3.5 million are white men? Maybe? About, I think the last time I calculated it, it's about...
Is that really all?
Yeah. Yeah, really, when you look at the...
Oh, white men. Okay,
yeah,
sure.
But the General Assembly, what's it, about 80% white men, maybe 70% white men?
But that's, I would imagine, in line with the state legislature in Texas and Tennessee and Washington,
yeah.
And certainly with the U.S. Congress. We had, what, 21 women in the U.S. Senate recently, and that was an all-time high.
Yeah, women just that mere statistic shows you that our General Assembly has a huge, long way to go, regardless of ideology, of truly being representative of the North Carolina public. I mean, the reality is that we are a ridiculously gerrymandered state in which vast swaths of people have no chance of running for office, no chance of having their voice represented. It's something Becky and I agree, we've got to get rid of this partisan gerrymandering that gives us a chance to have a real dialogue about these issues. As things stand now, a handful of people in the General Assembly leadership can decide what they want to do and do it at the last minute and pass it, you know, just issue the edict and it becomes law in the state. They'll override the governor if they want to. It's just, I can't believe that's how our state is supposed to be organized and how it ought to run.
One more question. I want to potentially spin this forward into this final question. Senate Leader Phil Berger spoke with a few members of the Capitol Press Corps yesterday. When asked about which bills he was glad to see survive the deadline, he mentioned some of the election bills, and there were a few. One dealing with ballot order, another which makes it easier for third-party candidates to get on the ballot, and the latest effort to redraw Asheville City Council districts. What do you make of all the election legislation?
It's just the same pattern. It's been the same for the last few years. Almost all of these bills and laws are designed to maximize the power of Republicans, or to maximize the power of the General Assembly vis-a-vis local government or vis-a-vis the governor. Every time there's a chance to change the ballot order or change when we have an election or change when we have a primary, it's all designed to benefit the majority party almost invariably. And although there will be excuses concocted as to what the supposed motive for it is, I don't think anybody has any illusion that these are they're playing hardball politics, and you can give them credit for, you know, doing, getting it through and doing what they want to do. But I don't think there's any illusion about what this is about. It's about cementing and holding on to power as long as possible. Senator Berger, for years, sponsored nonpartisan redistricting legislation when he was in the minority. He now won't even let it be heard. The same with Speaker Moore. They have an agenda. They want to stay in power. They've got an ideological agenda that they want to inflict on North Carolina in the years to come, and they're aiming to stay in power. That's what these are about.
Rob is exactly right. This is hardball politics, and it is all about staying in power. And we saw it with the Democrats, and now we see it with the Republicans. There's nothing as partisan as election law changes. And this is nothing new. You know, this is not all of a sudden we see this with Republicans. This went on for decades with Democrats. Now that Republicans are in charge, they want to change things to the extent they can to their advantage. We saw it under Democrats. I'm not saying that that's right from either side, but the fact of the matter is this is hardball politics, and this is the reality of it.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of Research at NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Thank you both.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.